welcome one, welcome all, step right up, ladies and gentlemen, here we go, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 76 is on its way right now. I'll explain that in a bit. Howdy everybody, Portal Gaming Podcast is a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. Check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. Howdy, everybody. I am your host, The Brant. I am solo this episode. Portal Gaming Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. And as you are listening to this in the month of January 2018, you definitely want to go check out their Kickstarter. Dice Tower has been nothing but wonderful to us. All the people over there have always been really nice. Eric Summer points many people towards our store in the New England area, which is great. And they just do an awesome job. We are part of their network, as I said. Been down to Dice Tower Convention. Really like those guys. So support what they're doing. You know, they're one of the biggest names in the business, but it's not just, you know, it's got good reason. So definitely check them out and see what's happening there. Okay, this is episode 76. I am still compiling episode 75. It is the best of 2017, and it's just been crazy. weather-wise, especially, and just busyness, and I haven't got around everybody, and I thought, I could just throw together, you know, I got a couple people's top tens. I've got an hour's worth of an episode, but I really want to make that, you know, a good number of people. So I'm just going to hold off on 75, and I'm going to keep that number 75, because in the grand scheme, it'll go in that order. So that'll be coming out later, hopefully next week, maybe the week after, I don't know. But I want to get a lot of people on there, so that's kind of my plan. I got plenty of people that have helped me, got plenty of ideas. It's going to be a fun episode, but just going to wait a little bit longer to get that done. So this episode instead, thanks to the absolutely frigid tundra-like temperatures of New England this time of year, specifically Connecticut, I suppose, although I imagine it's only worse if you go north of us here, this is going to be entitled, Sir, Your Tauntaun will freeze before you reach the first marker. that the snow and the very cold temperatures, which we certainly have cold temperatures, this is January, but even December, they're early this year. But my prediction, so we will see in a few episodes, well, more than a few episodes, but we'll see after this winter. My prediction is that we will have a warm March, and this will be done. Last year, we had warm January and February. In fact, I remember going to New York Toy Fair in February, maybe like second weekend of February, and it was 72 degrees, and I was standing in a t-shirt in Times Square. But I predict, and then in March, we had a big snowstorm and had cold for like 2.5 weeks into April. I'm going to predict this year, it's going to be cold now, we're going to have to suffer through it till February, and then it's going to warm up in March. We're going to have some 60-degree days in March, and it's going to be beautiful. So let's suffer through it early. And get to that. I really don't mind cold, but this is ridiculous. Like, negative 15, and I had to get my two daughters up and out of the house this morning to go to my music practice, band practice, play some bass guitar. And, it was some serious business to get the car started and get everybody bundled up and everything to go out in minus 15-degree weather. But, hey, what are you going to do? So, this is an exciting episode. I have four awesome games to talk about, to tell you about, that I have played lately, and it has been a week of playing the hits, especially thanks to obviously having some snow days here, and then I'm going to tell you about 22 games that will not be on my top 2017 list, because I did not get a chance to play them. So these are 22 games that I wish I hadn't missed. Pretty much all of them are in publication in America, a few... Now, I think they all are except one, in fact. Two. Anyway. And I just didn't get to them. So that is that for whatever reason. So I want to talk through those games and what I know about those and see. So, yeah, it kind of feels like a Rotto-esque podcast. I think I say that a lot when I'm solo. But it just feels like I'm going to do, hey, here's what I've been playing. And here's what I'm excited to play. And go from there. So there's that. So on that note, I'll take a little sip. And away we go. All right, I'm going to put these in order of enjoyment, I believe. So the first one I'm going to talk about here is London. So this is the second edition from Osprey. Shout out to Osprey. Thank them very much for sending us a box of goodies to review and whatnot here. Really appreciate that. We'll throw those in the demo library. So these things should be around there. Oh, when I get them back, you know, I gotta not at the store regularly since I don't work there full time. So take them home, open them, play them, get them back to the store in terms of all that, but it should be there otherwise for you. So London is a Martin Wallace game, and it is really just a card drafting, engine building game. I don't know if it's really drafting, really just card playing, engine building game. Kind of like Terraforming Mars, not really a board here. So what's happening in London is you are rebuilding the city of London, and you are trying to, you know, put all these prestigious buildings into place for points, build markets that will generate revenue, and whatnot, and you're all the while trying to avoid poverty. So basically on a turn, you draw a card. You can either draw from the top of this deck, and the deck is like A cards, B cards, and C cards, so it kind of ramps up. You shuffle them and throw those there. Or you can pull a card off the center board. So the board is just a space holder for cards and victory points. And so when you discard cards, you put them on that board. And once there's enough cards based on the number of players, you sweep half of them away. They're out of the game permanently and create more spaces. So it kind of moves the game along in that sense. You play through that deck and the game is over. So on your turn, you draw a card. And then you have four different actions. So you can add cards to your city. In order to add a card to a city, you have to discard a card of that same type. So there's like three types in the game. You have to discard one of those. You can add as many cards as you want. So you can kind of empty out your hand if possible. Another option is you can run your whole city. And so when you run your city, you do everything on the cards. Most cards have an ability, gain money, gain points, you know, help you lose poverty, whatever, and then get flipped over so you can never use them again. The real engine here is that then after you use the cards, you gain one poverty point for every stack of cards that you have, plus one for everything that's in your hand. So that's kind of the balance that you're trying to do. So then a quick note, once you run it, you flip the cards face down, you can put another card on top of those cards. I think you could put a card at any time on top of them anyway. There's a few you will because you'll score points only with them. So you're just going to build right on top of them because they're not going to do anything when you run your city. You can also buy a borough or a district. I believe it's a borough. So they're kind of larger size cards that cost money. So once you generate money, you can buy those. And they give you like draw cards right now, lose poverty, gain victory points, and then like an ongoing special ability. Like it might say you can choose to draw 0, 1, or 2 cards on your turn instead. Something like that. So you can kind of have your strategy. But the key is once you buy those burrows, once you buy a new one, you cover up the previous ability that you had. So kind of what you're looking at there. Other option on your turn, you can just draw 3 more cards. You're just looking for more things. You can go digging. And yeah, I said buy the burrow. So that's all your options. So you just keep playing through the game. So my wife and I played this, and it was very enjoyable. We really liked it. There was a couple places that slowed down and stalled. The end of the game, the beginning of the game, money was not an issue. The end of the game was super tight, and it was really hard to get money and a little bit frustrating. We were taking out a lot of loans, and loans are always tough. You know, they always feel like you're not supposed to take out a loan. So it's always like, oh, I am supposed to take out a loan. Luckily, having played Brass and knowing, like, loans are essential, Martin Wallace games, taking loans are key, and of course, train games if you played them. What's nice about London is they've really streamlined it down. This is not a heavy game anymore. I probably could argue that it's light. It's lighter than Terraforming Mars for sure. There's just not as many things to track. But, you know, I want to be careful of calling it light for people that are, you know, just not playing as much or not as interested in going that deep. So it probably sits in the medium category in terms of that. But, yeah, once you figure out a turn or two and what you're doing, you know, within by the end of that A stack, you know what's going on and you're just playing the game. It's really not, unlike Terraforming Mars where you may be like, okay, now I don't know what this card does. What is this referencing? You know, a third, half of the way into the game, you're still asking those questions. And this one, you're not. And this one, you know what everything is. And cards might be a surprise, like, ooh, they put something like that in there, but not a big deal. So then at the end of the game, there's various things to score points. Your money scores points. You have victory points throughout all those cards that you played. You go back and count them all, kind of like a deck builder. And then the person with the least amount of poverty gets rid of all of theirs. Everybody else gets rid of that same amount, and it's the difference that makes you lose points. So If my wife had 17 and I had 26, she would get rid of her 17. I'd have 9 left over, and then I'd look on the chart and it would say 9. Up, oh, you lose, you know, 11 points or whatever it is. And so I would lose 11 points and have to go from there. So you really, it's the whole I don't have to outrun the bear, I just have to outrun you mentality with poverty, which is really fun. Because it can be crazy some turns where you're, like, trying to avoid it. You're like, oh, I got 5, and I went back 2, so I only have 3. And then all of a sudden you get 11. But you really need to push yourself forward in that sense, in terms of doing that. So it's a really solid game. It's really fun. Like I said, it was parts where we thought it bogged down a little bit. Like, I really thought it was going to be an hour, and it ran us an hour and a half. But I think once we kind of get through all those questions, and we're like, oh, what does this do? What's that? Oh, are we playing this right? It would be closer to an hour with 2 players. So probably 2 out. Well, go through the same deck. It's usually just longer. It's probably an hour and a half with 4 players just out of doing that. If everybody knows what they're doing, it's probably even the same length, but a little bit tricky. So that is London from Osprey Games. But like I said, I'm going to go through these games in order. This is a great game. So even though I'm saying this was my least favorite of the games that I got to play, this is a great game. So really excited for that. Next up is Santa Maria. This is from Aporta Games. And honestly, this one and the next one are kind of tied in my mind. I'll tell you the tiebreaker there. But Santa Maria is a pretty themeless Euro here. It takes place over 3 years, and you are settling the New World. So it's the whole Nina, Pinta, and Santa Maria. And you are colonizing the New World. Essentially, it's a dice-drafting resource management game. So you have a board, and it has columns 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and rows 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And you roll a bunch of white dice in the middle, and everybody gets a single blue die. You roll that, and you have a little place to track resources and money, and you're trying to gain happiness. Most happiness at the end of 3 years wins. So essentially what you're doing in a turn, you have different actions, but you're going to draft a die from all those out there, and you're going to run your column. So you have a bunch of pre-printed buildings, as well as you can attain new buildings as an action. And you'll run that whole column, and then the last building that you used, you're going to put the die on. It's now blocked for the rest of that year. So I may gain an ore and gain a wheat and move up on the religious track. And then I block the move up on the religious track and gain a wheat, because I was on the same space. I block that one. I can't use it again. So if I run that same column again, I won't get that ability. You can also spend coins to run any, not run, to use any one building on your board. The next time it's 2 coins, the next time it's 3 coins. You can give up wood, so you generate wood. You can give up wood, or, sorry, 2 wood or 2 wood and a wheat to buy a new tile that you lay out on your board. It will cover 2 or 3 spaces. If you complete rows or columns, because you have empty spaces and you have some that are filled in, you get points for colonists. So colonists don't do anything, but at the end of the game, if you complete a row, they give you victory points or a column. If you can stand one at a crossroads, they'll score for both your row and your column. There's a free action to trade resources. And then there's like shipping. You can ship goods and trade them in for happiness points and end of round upgrades. There's a conquistador track. So you can move up the conquistador track, and that resets every round. Whoever gets furthest up that track will earn the most victory points. And there's like, we were playing 4 players, so there's first, second, and third. It's basically everybody but the last place player gets points if you play with 2, 3, 2 or 3, or 4. And then there's some gold you can get. Gold is a wild resource, could be used as anything. I mentioned that religious track, so as you move up, that's pretty key because you unlock in-game abilities and or end-game abilities or just access to resources. So there's 10 different spots, and you can place one of your monks there and gain that ability. And if other people want that spot, they have to pay you coins later on. As well as you unlock more blue dice. So those are the blue dice that can go across your rows. So those are really important. That's essentially it. There's more to that. This is one of those games that's like, oh, you do this, you do that, you do the other thing. Okay, here we go. AP Central. Not in a bad way. I'm going to say that in a good way this time. But you know your players, you know who you're going to play with, and where that's going to go. So it wasn't too bad for us. With 4 players, we were probably 2 hours, maybe slightly over. And the box says 45 to 90. So for a first play, kind of makes sense. I did mess up a few rules, too. Yeah, you're only supposed to be able to draft 3 white dice, and we let people draft whatever. I think somebody might have drafted 4 while somebody else drafted 2. But I don't think we got too extreme with, like, 5 and 1. So I don't think it was a big deal overall. But, well, it's still a big deal. But anyway. So what's really great here, though, is that dig in. That, like, oh, how far can I stretch these resources? What else can I do? 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 Very much reminded me of Terra Mystica, just in that sense of how far can I stretch all these resources. So those three rounds, you know, were each decently long. They were 30 to 45 minutes for us, with everybody. So there's that piece, but it was really good. There's a bunch of endgame points that I mentioned, the shipping tiles, the colonists, you trade in your resources, and then some of those monks give you endgame scoring. So yeah, I think that's it. Very, very mechanical, but very fun. You know, the theme is super pasted on. This could be anything. You could just be building a supermarket, like whatever it is, and people go down the aisles or the rows. I don't know, something. Wouldn't be a big deal. But I didn't care. It was so fun. I didn't need theme for that. So that is Santa Maria from Aporta Games. Can't wait to play it again. Really, really good. Next up is Dinosaur Island. I have been waiting for this game. I wanted to back this on Kickstarter, but I was in my self-imposed 6 months of no board game buying, except Gloomhaven, because I got an opportunity to buy it. And I did, and I'm so glad I did, because we played that unendingly. So my wife says it was fine that I broke my own rule, because it was kind of her game too. So works there. So I did not back this game, but we did manage to get a copy in, and I got to play it twice now. So, Dinosaur Island is Jurassic Park the board game. I mean, there's just no ifs, ands, or buts. It has jokes in there. Haha, butts. Hold on to your butts. It has jokes in there, you know, related to that. The clever grill, Jurassic World, like Tilt-A-Whirl. It has all sorts of attractions and rides. So, you are building up your own park. You are gaining DNA, genetically engineering dinosaurs to add to your park. The really neat element is you're controlling your threat. So every dinosaur you build adds threat, and you have to gain security. Otherwise, people will get eaten, and then they get attracted to the park. So the game does not last a certain number of rounds. There's these objective cards that come out, and everybody kind of rushes to complete those. I have played the medium game. So there's short game objective, medium game, and long game. I heard short game was like too short. So I did medium with both groups that I introduced it to. Well, it was a two-player and then a four-player game. I have not tried the long game. I'm intrigued to see where that's at. But essentially, it's like all these kind of different rounds. They really mixed up a bunch of stuff. So the beginning is dice drafting. You roll a bunch of DNA dice, and you can gain different types of DNA. And they've got basic and advanced. And you've got like a cap on your DNA. It's your cold storage, and you need to increase that cap and draft the DNA, as well as gain like recipes for different dinosaurs. So you can make all sorts of different dinosaurs into real dinosaurs, which is cool. So they have those in there. So that's kind of the first round. Then the second round is like a market phase. You're purchasing specialists to help run your park to give you special powers. You're purchasing lab upgrades for the third phase to have extra actions you can do. And you're purchasing attractions to put in your park that will gain victory points, attract more people, possibly give you money. Yeah, kind of in-game victory points and end-game victory points, I guess, is what those do. Cost a lot of money, though, so you really have to generate revenue to build those and fill up your park. So yeah, then the third phase is worker placement. Everybody does it simultaneously. Oh, it's worker placement on your own board. So you can take actions to exchange DNA for other DNA, actually create dinosaurs, increase security, increase your paddock size. Very thematic things, you know, that you're doing. You're really building your park here. Fourth phase is a little bit arbitrary. Everybody draws patrons out of the bag, visitors, and some are hooligans, and hooligans basically just prevent everything. They don't pay to get in, they stand in line, they don't get eaten, all sorts of things. They don't score victory points for you, so they're kind of a pain. And it's a little bit of an overwrought phase. Like, you draw all these things out of the bag, and then you line them all up, and then you count them, but it doesn't really matter in terms of all that, so it's kind of strange. And then phase five is the cleanup phase. You kind of toss things out, re-roll the dice, shift things up in the market, and keep going. So you keep playing until all but one of the objectives is fulfilled, and then that will trigger the end on that round. And basically, anytime those are completed, you get them. And so two people can score an objective in the same round, but once it's scored, that's it. Nobody else can score it. And you go from there. So yeah, it's a really neat game. It's really fun. All those little mechanisms are really interesting. I don't like the drawing people out of the bag. The hooligans are weird, and there's only 10 out of 80, so I get it. Like, hey, if you draw four, stinks to be you. And there's security guards and PR people that can help you to like mitigate that. Which is fine, but it still just feels like a funny phase. You draw all these, and then you have to explain to people, okay, everybody but hooligans pay you, then line them up in your park, and, like, let's say I have two dinosaurs in one paddock, then that means two visitors can go there. It's very simple, but it's like you start setting them up only to then add them up and then discard them again. So it's this round that it probably takes, like, 5 minutes. It doesn't take 5 minutes. It probably takes, like, 2 or 3 minutes, and you could almost do it without the bag, and the hooligans are just kind of strange, so... Yeah, I'd almost rather there was a mechanism like when your security... Oh, I didn't mention that, sorry. When your threat level is higher than your security, the difference is how many people are eaten. I'd almost rather, like, if it was one or two, you exchanged for hooligans, like they broke into the park, and then when it got to three or four, dinosaurs started to break loose and eat people. That might be a good system for the hooligans, so they feel a little strange. I do know in the Kickstarter version, there's, like, VIPs, and I don't have that version. There's also some extra cards. So I do wonder how the VIPs would change the game. That might be a little bit better in terms of what they did. They may override the hooligans. So that might be a fun aspect that unfortunately is missing from the retail copy. But I don't really want to blame them there. So I did put this above Santa Maria, and I feel like I'm saying a lot more negative about this game. But the thing about this game, it is so thematic. This is a Euro through and through with a couple of those random elements, but, you know, not really a big deal. But the theme is so strong in the game. And, like... I mean, how many people don't like Jurassic Park? I'm amazed they didn't go get the Jurassic Park license. Like, they should have just gone and gotten the Jurassic Park license and slapped all on the box. And this game would have sold even 10 times more. So who knows? Maybe they'll try to do something like that. Maybe there's a reason they couldn't. I'm sure it's expensive, but go for it. And so I think this is really a good game that's made great by the theme. Like, who doesn't want to build a dinosaur park? Who doesn't care if their people get eaten? That's funny. It does seem like rushing those objectives is a big deal, like just throwing caution to the wind. I think Brian was playing with me and was like, well, I got 4 people eaten, but I completed an objective or two this round, so who cares? And that's fine, but it's a weird theme, right? People get eaten by dinosaurs, and you're like, yeah, whatever, I completed objectives. Your park isn't shut down, it isn't investigated, although that's kind of what happened in the movies. They keep going, so apparently there's a Jurassic World 2, even though, you know, hundreds of people were killed by dinosaurs, so. There is that. There's a solo mode in both of those. I actually did just play the Santa Maria solo mode. It was okay, but it was very... just score points. I don't know what the Dinosaur Island is. So again, these are kind of neck and neck. I could see with more plays Dino Island, like, yeah, I really like that theme, but it's sliding down a little bit. And Santa Maria, like, there's no theme, but it's moving up because the mechanisms are really good, so. There's those two. But Dinosaur Island is from Pandasaurus Games, and they did a really good job with that game. And then last up is Pulsar 2849 from CGE Czech Games Edition. This is a company that can basically do no wrong. They are so good. And this game is phenomenal. It's really, really good. Got a chance to play a few rounds, 3 or 4, at PAX Unplugged. Talked about it. Got to play a full game. So good. Finished, Brian looked at me and said, you want to play again? Had it not been midnight, I would have said, yeah, let's do it. Set it back up, let's go again. So the game takes place over 8 rounds. The theme is pretty thin. You're in the year 2849. There's these pulsar waves that are detected out in space, and people want to go harvest them and collect them to gain energy and all sorts of things, and here we go. Essentially, the game is a dice drafting game. Notice that's happened. Santa Maria, Dino Island, Pulsar. Apparently, it's a good mechanism. So, really neat mechanism. You roll dice in a two-player game. You roll 7. You set them up where they are. You find the median, and it helps you to find the median, and shift one way or the other or stay on that spot, and then you start drafting dice. If I draft low dice, then I get to move my tokens up on either a first-player order track or on a technology track. You're like gaining technology components, I guess. And if I draft high, then I have to move them down. It's the number of spaces. So the median is 3, and I want to draft a 1, I get to move up 2 spaces. Things like that. So it really makes those decisions, not just like, oh, no-brainer, I want a 6. Well, if I take a 6 right now, I'm going to have to go backwards. Or, hey, wow, the median ended up being like between 4 and 5, so it's only going to cost me 2 to get a 6. I better take it now and work with it. And then you just have, after everybody drafts 2 dice, you have a plethora of actions that you can do. There are so many. So we played like kind of the advanced mode where you get an individual player board that essentially has like a pyramid technology. As you do different things, you unlock things above it to get to like an ultimate ability. You can move your ship around the galaxy, which is the board. You can upgrade technologies. You can research. I don't even know what those are. The theme is not super strong here, but it doesn't matter. The game is so good. You can get patents up there. I can't remember what these other things are. And then there's a way to get bonus dice. So those little tech cubes I was talking about, you can discard four of those, and you can copy a die that wasn't used, and you can use it as a bonus die. As well as you can build these other tiles, transistor tiles. I can't remember what they're called. When you connect two, you'll have pips, and you make a bonus die. You can only use one bonus die per round. It's eight rounds, so that kind of limits you. Then you can stop on, there's like random planets you can stop at. If you stop there, you get a special ability. They'll also score points in the game for every planet you discover. You can stop on the pulsars. You throw your ring around them, and then you can get a pulsar, a gyrodone, and then later you can flip it to get it running, and it'll generate victory points at the end of every round. So that's most of some of the things you can do. So that overwhelmingness is pretty nuts. We just kind of played it up as like, okay, we're not gonna go crazy, and if we don't do the optimal thing, that's okay. But you start to get a flow. Like, I'm really doing this, I'm going for that, that's gonna score points, this is what I wanna do, and you're just kind of running your engine. I think we finished, Brian, was like 199 to my 176. So it was kind of like I was behind, and then I scored a whole bunch of points because I had discovered planets at the end. And I didn't quite catch up, and it kind of felt like, I was behind the whole time and I couldn't catch up. But that's pretty close, you know, for 200 points to be within 20 for two players is pretty good. There's also end game things you have to try to do. So ours was discover planets or have different types of gyrodones or pulsars or have a whole bunch of technologies. So that was a little strange because I did two of them and Brian did two of them, but inherently his were worth more points than mine. But I didn't have a perfect draft on my last turn. You can also do a gate run. There are colored spaces, like colored pathways on the board. And if you go over a bunch of the same color path, you can like score points for each one. So it just gives you all these things to think about. So again, there could be a whole bunch of AP here. I'd be a little scared of this game with four players because of that. But honestly, like, you don't really get in each other's way other than drafting the dice. So if I'm taking my turn and you're the fourth player, like, you should know what you're gonna do. You're not really tactically waiting to see what I do. You know, the technology is a little bit, if somebody takes one from you, you don't have it, but you know, you always want to have a backup plan in terms of all that and make yourself go first. So the game was amazing. I can't wait to play it again. Spoiler, definitely one of the best games of the year. It was so good. So that's Pulsar 2849. Really, really like it. So that is four amazing games that I have played. So I've been really lucky, as well as Gloomhaven with the new insert that my wife made. Has been awesome. Drop Mix with new cards. So I've just really been having a blast with all these things that I've been doing. And really been exciting. So good time. All these great games coming out. So let me know what else is on your table. You can send me an email, portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com, or you can hit me up on Twitter @portalgaming60, and we will chat about that more. But as I am prone to do in solo episodes, I'm just going to keep rolling through. Honestly, it makes my editing a lot easier too. And even these solo ones, I admit I'm a little lazy and don't really edit much out at all and just push them out because, why not? So here we go. I am going to move on and talk about 22 games that I did not get a chance to play in 2017 that I'm hoping I will play. Isn't that crazy? I'm going to play 22 games in addition to whatever comes out between now and June. It's always my goal before I have to vote for Dice Tower Awards. I want to have played these games. So here we go. Ready? Number one is Rajas of the Ganges. I actually had a copy of this game, or have Brian's copy, and have played through by myself. Really just want to play that. This is Inca and Marcus Brand. It is their take on a worker placement kind of dice, not drafting, dice game. Use dice as workers. I don't know. And what's neat here is you've got a fame track and a wealth track, and when and one goes clockwise and one goes counterclockwise, and when they meet, that triggers the end of the game. So it kind of gives you three different strategies: heavy wealth, heavy fame, or balance of both. Seems decently light, but it was pretty fun. Lots of resource management, as you do. Next, I really want to play Warhammer 40K Shadespire. This is probably like my biggest Amerithrash type game that I've been trying to get to the table, wanting to play. I'm not into minis. I'm not into painting, but I really want to try this game, and it has orcs. So I've been watching a bunch of stuff on this, and probably will try to get a chance. Honestly, the two-player aspect is the part that's the hardest, because as much as, you know, my wife will play a lot of two-player games with me, it's like, what are we actually picking to play? Like, are we not going to play Gloomhaven or something, Ashes, that she already likes? Talk about that a whole bunch, but that's been my hesitation, like, do I bring another one of these games? But I like the idea that you just kind of pick up packs and you're good. So it's kind of easy to keep adding to. Seventh Continent is the third one, so I really want to play this. I basically think this is a solo game for me. So, you know, finding somebody's copy that I could play and try out and see what it's like. It sounds really cool, story-driven, all that. And so I really want to check out Seventh Continent, an exploration, choose-your-own-adventure, card game extravaganza. The Expanse from WizKids Games and Jeff Engelstein. Just heard so many good things about this. People's number ones, people's top tens. It's got the Twilight struggle mechanisms, but with multiplayer. Have a copy. Played it by myself. Kind of tricky to play. It's area control, and it's take that, but I think I'm going to like it. Why? 45 minutes to an hour. There's a deck of 45 cards. You shuffle in six scoring cards, kind of, you know, into the bottom, you know, not quite, you don't quite make quarters, but almost quarters. You kind of make three and then lay out some cards a third. So you don't play quite through all 45 cards. You figure if it's a minute a card, it's a 45-minute game. So if everybody's turn is 1 minute, the game's about 45 minutes till it finishes. I think that's going to be key. I don't mind take that game's area control. We'll see. But it seems really cool. It seems well thought out. It's boring. It's bland. It's a bunch of cards with text. It's cubes. It's little chits like an old war game. The board is nothing amazing to look at, so it's got to be all in the gameplay. But Twilight Struggle proved it to me that, like, you can have an incredibly thematic game in something that seems so non-thematic, because that game makes you feel like you are in the Cold War like nothing I've ever played in my life. Makes you feel like you're there. It's so good at doing that. So if The Expanse can do that, and I think pulling on that influence political struggle is key. If you've seen this show, that's very much what it's like, more than epic space battles. So would it be better if it had minis? It'd be cooler looking. You know, non-cubes, could it have other things? Sure, but go from there. Pictures, it's not so much that the pictures, the stills are bad. I don't really mind that so much. It's that everything's dark. It's all these people with, like, just half of their face shaded that makes it look kind of rough. So there's that. All right, number five is the Motherlode game, Twilight Imperium 4. I definitely want to play this. I played Twilight Imperium 3 like 2 years ago now, so it's time for another game. I really want to play Twilight Imperium 4, so just got to find time to get to the table. I don't have a copy. At that price point, playing it once every 2 years is not quite worth it for me. Personally, if I had a group that really loved it and wanted to play it, you know, once a year, twice a year, I'd probably pick up a copy at that point, because I think it would be worth it. But I really want to try the fourth edition and see what they changed there. Number six is one that I think I might end up playing soon. I don't have it, but as soon as I can acquire it, my wife sounded really interested in Legacy of Dragonholt. So this is like a choose-your-own-adventure intro RPG. And Kathy has always said that she wants to play RPGs. And we've played a couple, and she's really enjoyed them, but the people we play with aren't as big on them. And so I think a two-player RPG would be awesome for us. And from what I've heard, people are like, you could just sit on your couch and read this. There's no rolling dice. There's just making decisions and reading through. We can swap. She can sit and crochet. We obviously can't watch anything, and we could just play the game and read through. So I think this is going to happen. Because when you get to these winter nights and you're just tired and worn out, sitting on the couch could be a good plan for us. in terms of that. So Legacy of Dragonhold, I'm really excited to try. And I hear the writing is awesome in that. My wife is an avid reader, so I think she'll enjoy that. Sidereal Confluence is number 7. These aren't in order. I'm just listing them so I remember to get through 22. Sidereal Confluence, I don't know how and where and when to get to this game, but it sounds really cool. It's like a 9-player trading cubes for other cubes, and you eventually figure out what things are worth. Like, ooh, now glass is worth more, or ore, or refined materials, or whatever it is. These are all worth more things. And so I've got to try to, you know, acquire them and trade for them and all this chaos. And just sounds fun to play a big game with 9 people with all that trading and everything. So I really want to try that at some point. Number 8 is Genties, and this is going to be published by TMG. It was a Spielworks game. Basically disappeared in Europe with a couple copies that came over to North America prior. But this is from Stefan Risshaus, who made Arkwright, which everybody knows is pretty much one of my favorite heavy Euros. It's very, 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 very good, and I want to play this game, which is supposed to be like a Civ card game. So definitely want to try that, so we'll see what TMG does with that. The next one, actually, I don't know that I actually want to play this game, but it's in so many people's top 10s, like everybody's top 10. So it's Sagrada. It's a dice rolling, like glass window making. I love, you know, those glass windows and whatnot. Those things are so cool, but I don't think the game really carries that theme super well. So, but it's just been in so many people's lists, and I'm like, how long is this game? A half hour, 45 minutes? So of all the games on this list, this is probably the, like somebody's going to make me try this game. I'm not going to choose it, but I want to play it, so I'm not going to seek it out. But so many people loved it so much. I thought Role Player was pretty fun, but not amazing. And that one just seemed more thematic and interesting to me. But people really like Sagrada. Maybe the simplicity is the beauty here. Number 10 is Dragonfire. So Dragonfire is Catalyst Game Lab's follow-up to Shadowrun Crossfire, which is an awesome game that I just never get out to play. So, you know, this one and Lord of the Rings LCG are probably two that I would love to play so much more than I do, because they're really good. So Dragonfire is now in the D&D universe, and you run through all that. So really interested in trying Dragonfire, didn't get to this year. Number 11, Path of Light and Shadow. I know this one's like now out to Kickstarter backers, and this is from Indie Boards and Cards. I don't know a lot about it, but the artwork is beautiful. I believe it's Beth Sobel. And it's all these little, you set up kingdoms and you go after each other. I think it's like card drafting, deck building, battling. It just sounds awesome. So I'm really excited to try that one, Path of Light and Shadow. Number 12, Transatlantic. Another one I had my hands on. I got to play through it. I don't have it at the moment. It's supposed to be Concordia-esque, definitely there. I think if you go into it saying, like, is this better or worse than Concordia, you're going to judge it based on that. Whereas Concordia is like a great game, top 25, top 50 game for me. And so I don't really want to judge it against that. But if you can really get into the idea of, like, building ships and shipping stuff across, you know, I think that's there and would be really fun to do. So I'm really excited to try Transatlantic and see how that plays. Azul is the next one. Azul is a 2-player. No, I think it's 2-4-player abstract game. People are just loving this game. I'm excited for this one. And actually, I'll jump to Heaven and Ale, which I didn't get to play because they're going to come out from Plan B. And we are going to pick up Plan B at the store because they came through a different distributor, but we're going to start carrying them because they've got so many great games there. High Frontier is another one that I really want to play. Space game. Interested in that one. I'm just going to start banging some of these out because I don't know a lot about them. Outlive is like a Fallout shelter type game, but I guess it's like a Euro style. It was really Kickstarter only, I think, so I never got a chance to try that one, but I really want to try that. Noria, I know, is really a 2018 game for America from Stronghold Games or North America. Cool mechanism wheel there. Altiplano, I'm excited to try. One of my wife's favorite games is Orleans, and I'm hoping... And we don't actually have Orleans. I'm hoping Altiplano does well and gets expansions. Some of these are silly here, too, after this. L5R, the LCG. I shouldn't go near it, but it definitely intrigues me, so I'd like to try it at some point. Jump Drive, I really want to try with my daughter, because Jump Drive is Race for the Galaxy super light, and I think that'd be fun for her to get into that. So I really want to try that. Apocrypha, the card game. We loved playing two-player Pathfinder adventure card game, and this is a newer, darker version. I don't think my wife would be into the darker version. She's not really averse to that, but it usually doesn't really draw her in for that. I mentioned Heaven Ale, and the last one is Venus Next. Terraforming Mars was my favorite game from 2016, and I can't wait to play the expansion, which I believe we now have a copy of, so that will be sometime soon. Yeah, I kind of ran through those last ones quicker there. Admittedly, my daughters just said, can you take us outside to play in the snow? So I'm going to go do that. I'm excited for that. So jumped through some of the ones on the end there. So I think that pretty much wraps it up. That's episode 76. That's 22 games from 2017. I didn't get a chance to play that I'm excited to play. Four amazing games that I got to play so far, and I'm looking forward to playing The Expanse, hopefully soon, Legacy of Dragonhold, and Shadespire, probably the next ones that are going to come down the line for me, and Venus Next. So we'll see how all those go. Let me know what games you are excited about that you didn't get a chance to play for 2017. Maybe I'll do a look ahead for 2018. That's fun. I know a lot of people are doing that, so it's kind of boring, but it's also fun. I guess it's boring. I think it's going to be boring to listen to, but it's fun to talk about it. And so I may do something like that. Need to talk about now that I'm talking about these. I'm ready. I want to go play these 22 games, so I need 24 hours to play 22 games. There. But that's it. So I am your host, The Brant, and until next episode, I hope you step into the portal.